Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. Well, it's hump day, and it's been an interesting week at the Brewer household. But everybody's good and safe and sound. I do want to send out some love and some energy to my good friend Jane Smith, who right after my show yesterday, sister called me, and she had suffered a series of mini strokes. She's doing well. I just spoke with her early this morning, and they're probably going to keep her another day under observation. Jane is one of the most interesting people I've ever known. Her stories are, I keep telling her she should write a book because she's a Holocaust survivor who became a Ziegfeld Follies girl who lived the high life in Manhattan. Her picture is on the wall in Carmine's. She's amazing. So my love and my good energy go out to her. I hope that they're going to let her come home tomorrow. So I have volunteered to pick her up and make sure she gets home safely and make sure she has everything she needs. And we will, myself and the rest of the Golden Girls, will keep a close eye on her. So having said that, today's show is, I intended to be all about the teacher, Ron Clark, the teacher who went into a public school in New York City, in Harlem, Spanish Harlem, and made a difference. And in my review of his story, which I'm going to share, I also was reminded of so many other people in the profession of teaching have changed the world. And, of course, one that I forget about, the fact that she was a teacher, I want to say her name was Annie. I've got her. I've got some paperwork on her, too, that I want to share with everybody. But she's the one who spent time with the young woman that was born blind and had all kinds of trouble. But we'll talk about that story. Everybody will recognize the names when I say them. But I forgot, she was a teacher too. So when you say the word teacher, you automatically envision a school or a classroom and, you know, a group of kids. That's not always the truth. Teachers come in many shapes and forms. So, but instead of telling about the movie, I found some interesting information about Ron Clark personally and some pictures, and I found a blog that was written by one of his students, and that's really what I want to share because I think that is amazing. So let's bring Shell in. Good morning, Shell.
Well, good morning, Rainey. How are you doing?
Good, honey. How are you?
Doing very well. Very well.
That's good. That's good. So I did find, like I said, some interesting stories. And, of course, the first thing that came up, which is so like us, instead of any, there was no picture of Ron Clark. I put in Ron Clark's story, I get the movie. I put in the teacher Ron Clark, I get the movie. I had to really dig to find the real Ron Clark. I kept finding pictures of the actor.
Right, right. Yeah, you can see it on the cover of his books. He's written three books, and he's on the cover of every one of his books, and that's when you can see the real teacher.
Mm-hmm. Well, I did find an article, and like I said, the one that I liked the best was in Reader's Digest, but it was written by one of his students who... it was in 1999, and she was in the fifth grade, or he was in the fifth grade. I don't know whether this is a male or female. But let me share that so that we can get this conversation rolling about some of the other teachers I don't even think about, you know. The first day my new teacher walked into our school in Spanish Harlem, I burst out laughing. Ron Clark was this young white guy from North Carolina who talked with a funny southern accent. He said he used to be a singing waiter. I thought, who is this guy? He's a complete joke. It was 1999, and I was in the fifth grade at New York City's PS 83. I figured I'd spend most of the year in the principal's office. I'd always been a troublemaker. I'd get yelled at, and then the teachers would give up on me. I thought that's what would happen with Ron Clark. I was wrong. That first week, I kept mocking him. He hauled me out to the hallway and said, I better shape up. Tamara, he said, you're a smart kid. You can do better. He told me I was a natural leader and that I'd go far in life if I started applying myself. I was mad at first, but then something happened. I began to respect him. There were 29 students in our class, and it didn't take long for us to realize that Ron Clark was no ordinary teacher. He was only 27, and he had the most unusual way of teaching. To help us learn the states and capitals, he changed the lyrics to a popular rap hit called Thong Song and had us sing and dance with him. When we read the Harry Potter books, he decorated our classroom like Hogwarts. And during the presidential election, he put campaign posters on the walls and covered the room with 5,000 red, white, and blue stars. Like most teachers, he had lots of rules. Treat each other like family. Don't butt in line. But the real difference was how involved he was. Mr. Clark ate with us in the lunchroom instead of going to the teacher's lounge. At first, my friends and I were thinking, what is he doing? He asked us what was going on in our lives. At recess, he came outside with us, and we taught him how to jump rope. When it snowed, Mr. Clark, who'd never seen snow before, pelted us with snowballs, and we pelted him back. Before coming to PS 83, he taught at Snowden Elementary in his hometown, Belhaven, North Carolina. His parents were DJs at dance clubs, so he grew up with music and energy. He wanted a life of adventure, he told me, but his mom encouraged him to apply for a position at Snowden when one of the teachers passed away. Mr. Clark ended up loving it. He came to Harlem because he'd seen a TV show about our troubled schools and the lack of qualified teachers. He wanted a challenge. Boy, did he get one. He, one of the really interesting parts of this is the innovation. The, you know, I mean, there's more of this story, but how many people do you know would go that extra mile? And I love the most, my favorite part of this story is the fact that he would have lunch with the kids, go out to recess with the kids. I mean, that in itself is like amazing. When I met him, I had a lot of anger inside me. I lived my whole life in Spanish Harlem with my mom, my grandmother, and my little sister, Ivy. I never had a father, but in my neighborhood, that's not unusual. You have to watch yourself. There are shoot-ups all the time. I know kids who have been shot or beaten up. I have friends who ended up in jail or pregnant. Isn't it funny how that's in the same sentence, like that's the same thing? Think about that for a minute. I could have ended up that way, too. But Mr. Clark and my mom wouldn't let that happen. Mr. Clark worked long hours making sure I did my homework. My grades rose. In fact, our whole fifth grade class scores rose in math and reading. In sixth grade, I entered the gifted program, and Mr. Clark was the teacher. I felt so lucky to have him for a second year. So that's just from this young girl. And, of course, 1999, what is that? What, that would be like 15 years, almost 16 years ago now. So this young woman is in her early 30s. It would be nice to know what the deal is with her now. Maybe later I will, Google her name and see if I find out anything about her and see if there's.
She was one of the main. I mean, it was a whole big classroom, but I think they focused on six or seven of the students during the movie, and she was one of the characters that was focused on because she really gave him a hard time. You know, and you could see in the movie that he finally won her over, but yeah, she, in the movie they showed her giving a really hard time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and I think I feel very strongly about, and we talk about this stuff all the time, so it's old news for us, but I feel very strongly about the investment that's made in people. Because becoming someone's friend, in my opinion, is an investment.
Mm-hmm.
It's an investment in your life and their life. And when it's a child who is needing, not always desiring, but certainly needing, and in a position to receive guidance, it's a big investment, a big investment, the kind of a slow annuity that you get back little reward in the beginning. But
right.
if you stick with it, it pays off big in the end, right?
Right. And
so,
the bigger picture of that is that it is important. I think that that's very effective. I think it's effective in parenting. I think it's effective for school teachers. But there's also a fine line there. You can't try to be so much of a friend to kids that you're now on their level. You have to raise them to your level by being friendly with them, by being by giving them somebody that they feel they can trust and be comfortable talking to. But at the same token, you have to instill in them respect at the same time. My nieces and nephew have always looked at me as a friend. I clown around with them. I tease them. I joke with them. We have a very, very fun, fun relationship, but there's never any misunderstanding that I'm the adult, and if something happens and I go into an instructional mode, or I say, hey, wait a minute, don't do that, that's not right, or something like that, they instantly listen to me. It's not like I'm still one of their friends. That there's never that line blurred where I can still instill, instruction and respect. They respect me, but they have fun with me. And it's not that difficult to achieve that. You achieve that, I achieve that, where we can, and that's what he did. He got down to their level to have them feel a sense of common ground with him and then raise them to his level. He didn't stay there with them and become a pal. It's not about being a friend in that regard. It's about being a friend in instilling trust and comfort that they will listen to you and respect you, and that's what he did very, very well. He has written 3 books, by the way. In fact, this is on my book list now. I want to get these books because the lessons he talks about can be used for parents as well. Although it's a teacher's guide, these are qualities that parents can use to reach their children and help their children. And one of the books even talks about that. So the final book in the series, it's called The Excellent 11. And I'm just going to read the title because it kind of tells you where he goes and why he was so successful. But these are the 11 excellent qualities that he went after and why he believes he was able to reach these kids. So the first is enthusiasm, which is something that Tamara talked about. He grew up in that family with music and everything, and he came into the classroom enthusiastic. He didn't come in there dragging his butt, looking like he didn't want to be there. He was extremely enthusiastic, and that really came out in the movie. Some of the things he did were adorable. The second is adventure. The third is creativity, then reflection, balance, compassion. Balance is what I was just talking about. You can be friends with the children, but don't be their pals. Don't get down to their level. Raise them to yours. And that's part of balance, knowing how far you can go to become their friends and then reel them back into you. There has to be balance. Compassion, confidence, utterly, utterly important. A lot of times when we talk about teachers that act badly, it's that whole bully-bullier syndrome. They feel they're being bullied to the kids, so they turn around and they attack back because they lack the confidence to deal with a child who's not acting well. They take it personally instead of realizing it's an issue with the child and not with them. They're not being disrespected. That child is acting out for a different reason, and you're just not figuring it out yet, so you're taking it personal. So confidence in a teacher is very, very important. Humor,
well,
extremely important. You and I know the importance of that.
Yeah.
The ninth is common sense. How many people across every job that you can think of lack common sense and just kind of make jerky decisions when they're in the middle of a situation? Common sense is really, really important, just to take a breath and review the situation before you have a knee-jerk reaction. Common sense, very important. Number 10 is appreciation. To express appreciation, it really is important. The simple act of saying thank you or you did a good job or things like that is so important to let children see, because a lot of times they don't think anything they do is even noticed. Appreciation is very, very important. And the last one is resilience. And that's just as important. When you read all these and you go through, how important is resilience? Not allowing a little bit of, where you go three steps forward and one back type of thing. A lot of people give up the minute they see any resistance, the minute they see something not going the way they envisioned it, But resilience is that tenacity to stick with it until you've finally seen the outcome you were looking for. So resilience is really, really important. And I love this list because it's almost everything you and I talk about.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, resilience, I don't think he ever uses the word in the workbook, but because it's for, it's to teach younger kids. But I think resilience is one of the things Izzy Kalman is trying to ingrain in all of us, to, to not be so, so easily offended by somebody else's point of view. You have to have some resilience in this world. But one of the other things that I seem to, after reading all these little stories about him, is, and I agree with you, the balance between a teacher and a classroom. But one of the other things that I recognized immediately is, how can you really know what to say or how to treat a group of kids unless you know what's going on when you're not there?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you almost can't. I think I've mentioned before being in the lunchroom in the elementary school and what an absolutely horrendous situation that is. So when this young girl talks about him going outside and jumping rope with them and having snowball fights with them, those are all bonding situations, but not, he's still the teacher and they're still the student, which is what you're talking about when you talk about the balance. But the other thing, the other big perk for him as a teacher, is he gets to get a feel of what's going on in their world when it's relatively unthreatening. It's not in the school, it's not in the classroom where they're under duress to not be made a fool of. He can't be in their homes, as a rule, I would think. So that's the second best place to be, out in the schoolyard, in the lunchroom. I mean, you and I, until we all, as workers, started bonding on Friday evening for dinner together, we all got to be really good friends. But isn't what really taught us about each other the Friday night dinners?
Oh, absolutely, because we got to see everybody out of context. You got to see everybody in different roles, and everybody became more three-dimensional. When you work with somebody or deal with somebody, they're very two-dimensional to you. A teacher is a teacher. A boss is a boss. A coworker is a coworker. They take care of this task, and you take care of that task. When you start talking to them on a personal level, and you start finding out about their attitudes and their opinions and what goes on in their family, and you find out they have brothers and sisters and maybe some nieces and nephews and what they do with their family, all of a sudden now this person is becoming three-dimensional to you. They're not the file clerk anymore. They're not the You know, they're not the general manager or the accounting manager or the, you know, or the store manager or something. You know, they're not a title or a function anymore. They become a person. They become somebody you can relate to and have common ground with. You know, but think about people at a job. Everybody's got their little niche and their little thing to do. The only common ground is that you're working for the same company. But unless you find out about personal things about that person, about the things that interest them, or, you know, or things like that, and you have some common ground, there's no connection. You connect when you learn about people and you find that there's some commonality and interest. And that's what bonded all of us. We're such all different people, you know, very, very different backgrounds, but there was that common ground of wanting to loving music, for instance, just loving to sit down and be with other friends, even though we're all very different people. There was that common thread that ran through us, a common thread of appreciation and respect and just liking to have a good time, you know, and not a wild time, but a good time, sitting down, having a few drinks, maybe sometimes listening to music or going to a play. How many times did we go to plays together, you know, or musicals or something? You know, we had our girls' night out. We'd go to the Kravitz Center for a play and dinner, and it was very, very bonding. It even made us tighter each time we did something like that.
Well, and I think when you put yourself into that realm with anyone, be it a friend, a family member, or a child, you connect more. Mm-hmm. Like you're saying, it's dimensional, and of course it is, but it's also about understanding how much alike you are, how much, oh my gosh, I like that too, or oh my gosh, that's my favorite food, or oh my gosh, oh, I love Johnny Mathis, oh, I would kill to be able to see this. Okay, and you find out that the people you feel the same way about this, and of course that's what
we
did. This
is what he wrote it. This book. It's only a few paragraphs. Let me read this. This is from the book, The Excellent 11. What I just read the list from.
Mm-hmm.
Qualities teachers and parents, you know, can use. Listen to what he wrote at the very end of the book. Because on Amazon, which the cool thing about Amazon, which I love, is that a lot of times you can look inside the books and you can read a few pages to see if the writing style or if the information even interests you. So I went to the end of the book where he says, in closing. So at the very end of the book, it says, of all the wonderful qualities that are mentioned in this book, no word better personifies a teacher. And remember, anything he says for teacher also goes for a parent.
Right.
Personifies a teacher than the word passion. Passion is why teachers teach and why parents devote their lives to raising their children. It is the fire in our hearts and the determination in our minds to make a difference. This year, I met many first-year teachers who have a light in their eyes, excitement in their voices, and a passion in their hearts to change the world. The beautiful thing is, changing the world is possible. One teacher really can make an impact that will inspire children and motivate them to touch the people they meet in their lives with compassion, appreciation, humor, and love. One teacher can spark a child to seek adventure, to have confidence, to take risks, and to truly try to make the same impact on others that was made on them. I will never forget the passion of Mrs. Owens, the gentle kindness of Mrs. Clark, his wife, Mrs. Clark, and the adventure of being a student in Mrs. Roche's class. I will never forget the lessons taught to me by my parents, their confidence in me, and their unconditional love. The influence of those individuals who I love and respect so much has molded me and made me who I am today. All children, whether they are our own or our students, can be influenced in the same way. We all can make an enormous difference in their lives. No aspirations are too high. No dream is too large. No goal is out of reach when it comes to having hope for the future of all our children. That is the power of being a teacher and the beauty of being a parent.
Well, it's very, very lovely. It's incredibly optimistic, which I think is another emotion that we tend to, let fall by the wayside because we think we can't, you know, like the little engine that thought it could and could. Our optimism gets buffered pretty badly as we grow up, I think, which is sad, but it is important to have somebody in your life who's a leader that is optimistic, for sure. I've often thought about the fact that, I mean, my family and I have been homeless. I mean, we lived in cabins and in March in upstate New York. There were several days when we lived in our van, but we always stayed together, and we made light of it. It didn't necessarily mean that's how I felt, but I knew that it was imperative for me to be the one that had some optimism and for me to be the one that wasn't fearful and for me to be the one that said, you know, we'll be fine. We'll get through this. So I think that's the other thing that this teacher did for these kids, because these kids were already downtrodden.
Right.
He showed them that, you know, hey, it doesn't have to be this way. Every step that you take forward is when you're not staying where you were. I mean, you know.
So the whole thing is, and you see this in the movie, the teacher, he actually does see a light in every child, as far as he's concerned, because you see him having an argument with either one of the other teachers or the principal in one area of the movie, and it's like, you know, why are you putting out such effort on these kids? And because his opinion is that every kid can be reached, you know, and that every kid has value because they can grow up to do amazing things. So why would you tell them they're stupid or they're a loser or treat them like they're a criminal or a problem? Because then that's how they're going to see themselves. If you tell a child they're a criminal or a loser or lazy long enough, then they become those things. Because this is their formative years. That's why it's called formative years. They're very, very easily inspired, either positively or negatively. And this is one of the things that he railed against in the school, is that basically these kids were throwaway kids. They were put in the problem class. And one of the reasons they were like that is because they didn't see that they were going to be able to go anywhere. They all had different challenging home lives, which he got involved in to help, a couple of the kids out with. Before I continue, I want to read the three titles real quick of his books, because you can tell by the titles where he's going. The one I already read from, which is the Excellent 11 Qualities Teachers and Parents Use to Motivate, Inspire, and Educate Children. The other book is called The End of Molasses Classes, Getting Our Kids Unstuck, 101 Extraordinary Solutions for Parents and Teachers. And then the other book, this is the oldest book, because that's 2012, this is 2000. Okay, so the first book he wrote is called The Essential 55. And I like the way that he does things in list format, kind of like what Izzy does. You know, he goes in a list format, and then he gives you like a list to work from. The Essential 55, an award-winning educator's rules for discovering the successful student in every child. And that's what it is with him. He sees a successful student in every child, regardless of how rebellious or disrespectful they are, because the only reason they're there, the only reason they're disrespectful or rebellious is because there's something going on that's not being addressed. If a kid has an abusive life, if they have they're having problems at home, and it doesn't mean abusive. It could just mean that their family, like the one with Tamara, you know, her mother was working two jobs. She had to take care of her brothers and sisters. She got home from school. It was her responsibility to hold the household down. So when she got to school, it was like she didn't want to work anymore. She was working all the time. She was a young girl, and yet, but people just saw her as rude and all this, but it was just because she was tired. She had to basically be the parent at home, so when she was at school, she wanted to let her hair down and have a little fun. You know, so when you'd find out her true story, she really wasn't a bad kid. She was just in an untenable situation as far as she could see it, and this is how she railed back against it. You know, but I love the storylines that he goes in, and I see that in a lot of teachers today, My great niece is going through some issues with a teacher at her school right now, and every time she tells me these stories, I can see this teacher has no confidence, very immature, loses her temper with the class a lot, and because of that, the kids in the class don't respect this teacher. And they don't respect her because she has no confidence, and because it's like the bully and the bullier, where if the bully says you're ugly and you start yelling back, no, I'm not ugly, why would you talk to me like that? Well, that's what the teacher is like. If the kids say anything that's disrespectful, she loses it, and the kids think it's funny. So, but in that regard, she loses it in a way that she'll call the kids stupid. She'll say inappropriate things to the children, and then she wonders why they don't respect her. And, you know, like you and I were talking about the other day, you know, using words like that, you know, calling a kid stupid, calling a kid disrespectful without finding out why they're being disrespectful, giving them that label is not appropriate. You have to find out what's going on in that kid's head. Why are they talking to you mean? Because if you get it through your head that a lot of times, most of the time it has nothing to do with you, then maybe you can help that child. You know, but children, people will let steam off wherever they can. And if people would become less sensitive to someone acting badly or saying something out of turn or saying something rude and realizing that it has to do with that person and not with you, that's where compassion and understanding comes in. Turn around and say, what are you in such a bad mood for? You know, unless you just did something that made them be disrespectful to you, then assume that there's something going on with them, not that they're being disrespectful to you. They're just using you as a vent. They're using you as a way to let steam off. And if more teachers would go there and not take it so personally, you'd have more teachers like Ron Clark.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, of course, this can get very deep because, you know, you always have the issues when an individual starts a career and has envisioned a career of academics. This is what I have run up against at any rate. They don't want to screw around with the bonding and the niceties and the learning about why the kid can't get the academics. They are a teacher of academics. They don't feel social. They don't feel as though the psychology of the classroom is any of their business, nor do they want it to be. This is what I have run up against. So depending on why they become a teacher, I think has a lot to do with what kind of a teacher they become. I had teachers in school that could care less about us kids. They're pretty good teachers with the facts, you know, like I remember absorbing, I had a science teacher who was a creep. I mean, you know, he was an army guy and everything was black and white, literally. I remember him looking at somebody one day and he asked him a question and the kid just looked at him, you know, this is eighth grade. The kid just looks at him and he said, "What in the hell is wrong with you?" Just like that. And the rest, I mean, in those days, the teacher didn't swear in the classroom. Even though hell is terrible. But he said that we all turned around and looked and we were all like shocked, right? But here's this kid, and this kid burst into tears, and it was a boy. He was so intimidated by the teacher, but the science that he taught, I learned so much about the sea and so much about, he was big, I guess he was a CB or something in the service. So he spent a lot of time on the ocean. And when he talked about that, I, in particular, could see the love he had for it, and he was a good teacher when he talked about that. But as far as bonding or teaching any of us about social or anything other than science, he wanted nothing to do with it. He didn't think it was any of his business, and he didn't care about it, you know?
So I think the reason Ron Clark went there with these kids is because they were already resistant to life, period. So in order to get them to the point where they could excel academically, he had to get them interested in life. They all felt like they were losers. They were all being told they were losers. And that's why he had to build them back up. He really rails against labeling kids. Like I said, in a couple of scenes in the movie, this is something that was like a big pet peeve of his, is not to label kids, because they will hear those labels, see those labels, know that's how you think about them, and then they act accordingly because that's what you expect of them. So that, because, like I said, they're in their formative years. There's an article that I read by Susan Graham, who's a national board certified teacher in the middle grades. She's a regular blogger at the Teacher Magazine, and she wrote this blog article years ago, shortly after the movie came out. She started, she's a teacher, and she watched the movie, and she said that in the beginning, the movie made her uncomfortable because, you know, she said, so why is it making me uncomfortable? Is it because I'm jealous that he's getting all this notoriety and now he's got books out? Am I jealous because he, you know, there's a movie out about him? You know, she said, what is my issue with this movie? And she said that she finally figured it out after watching Mr. Holland's Opus, which was another movie about a teacher who made a difference. And she said that one of the hallmarks in these is that they got so heavily involved in their students' lives. And she says, although it's a wonderful thing, and the inspirational outcomes that Ron Clark's teaching methods resulted in, she says, are absolutely inspirational and quite remarkable. She said a lot of teachers don't have the time to get as involved as these teachers did. They have their own families. They have their own children at home. And she said, so Mr. Clark sacrificed his personal life for the sake of his students, but how many teachers can really do that? So she said, that's one thing. But she says it is commendable that Mr. Clark wanted to take all of his students like to Disney Awards and to show them adventures. And she said, and he was able to do that. And she says, and it's admirable, and it's also very, very effective. She said, so at the end of her article, she said, so I've decided that I really have no real problem with Ron Clark. He's done great things for these kids, for the kids he taught. He has inspired a lot of teachers and does a great job of inspiring people to commit to excellence. But over the last few years, I've learned some important lessons about leadership and about trying to get other people to invest long-term in education initiatives. And then she goes through with some of her discoveries about whether or not it's affordable or sustainable or can be reproduced over and over and over again. And she feels that she ends up with, after she makes her analysis, she says, how does all this impact student learning, talking about the adventures and his methods? There is no doubt that Mr. Clark consistently improved performance for his students. But without following these students' performance over an extended period of time, it is difficult to know how their year with Mr. Clark impacted the long-term education experience for these children. Now, when she wrote this, the movie had just come out. And we also know I've read things that each one of these, most of the kids in that class did continue on, like Tamara, to be successful. Mr. Clark encourages, but this is how she ends her article. Mr. Clark encourages me to make my classroom management more consistent and intentional. And I love those two words. Encourages me to make my classroom management more consistent and intentional. He reminds me of the importance of early and regular parent contact, because this is one of the things he did. He saw a problem with one of his students. He would find out what was going on in this kid's home life. He inspires me to remember that every child has potential and that I could be that teacher that makes the difference. So she ends her article very positively. She goes through some of the pros and cons represented, because evidently he really was an extraordinary teacher and not every teacher could even do a lot of the things he did, but his rules are attainable. His rules can be followed. Just valuing the kids, showing them respect, it's important to show them to respect themselves. If they respect themselves, then you can get them to respect you. If you can't get them to respect themselves first, they're not going to have any respect to show to you because they don't even understand the concept of respect. That's like somebody that doesn't love themselves. It's really hard for them to truly love another person. You have to be able to have that go within before you can project it out to another human being. And that was one of his big things, is build these kids up, let them know that they can make their future whatever they want to make it, tell them stories about other people that were in their same situation or worse that are now very successful, athletes, actors, people in politics, business owners. You know, it doesn't mean that that's because what you're facing now, that that's going to be, you know, your reality 10 years from now. And that's what he did for these kids. He let them see that their future could really be molded by them, and to, you know, to feel some self-worth and some self-respect. Then they started respecting him. So it was remarkable.
Well, and I think a big part of that, too, for some kids that are in a situation like some of the kids in Spanish Harlem and Harlem and low-income minorities that are majorities today, but it's the struggle. Let's say that. Let's say the kids that are growing up in a struggle understand that there's not enough money in the bank to move into a bigger home, and there's six of us living in a two-bedroom house. Understand the fact that mom brings home just enough money to be able to, you know, pay the bills and put food on the table, and dad brings home enough to pay the mortgage on the house or the rent on the house. And they get all that, because parents make a big mistake, in my opinion. I think kids should know, should understand and respect the responsibilities of an adult, but I don't think they should be asked to manage or help or participate in the struggles of an adult when they're so young, because it's too much for them and it's none of their business at that point in time. They should always feel safe, and they should always be taken care of. And if they know about all those things, too much about all of those things, it's stressful for them. So a part of what he was teaching them is, you know, here I am, I'm capable, I'm able, I can tell you the difference between right and wrong and good and bad, and I like you. And that in itself is like this big boost to a lot of kids, to a lot of people. I will even say to you that I know adults that would, you know, would be ever so happy to find somebody who cared about them, that didn't need anything from them, somebody who liked them just for who they are, not for what they drive or how much money they have or what kind of shoes they have on, and just enjoy their company. So that's one of the other things that he established with this class, and apparently with his teachings and the books that he wrote, he tried to articulate what that means. And it's very simple for me. It means I like you, and you don't have to do anything more about it. I like you. And that's it. So once that part of it is out of the way, it opens up a door to all kinds of great things. A few things that are not always great, because when you become really, really good friends with people, and because when you invest in a friendship, like I said earlier, there will always be some times when the investment doesn't pay off as good as you'd like it to. But that's a part of the journey as well. But I think what he did is he taught these kids how to understand that they could live their life, and they could expect people to care about them without any strings attached. And they could see that there are struggles. But, you know, when you're in a struggle, you just learn how to be stronger. Instead of saying, oh, God, not me again, or, oh, my God, what's going to happen next? I quit saying that a long time ago, because that's almost like an invitation to see, you know, hit me with your best shot kind of a deal. So I think teaching kids all those things are imperative for their balanced health. You know, one of the teachers that I wanted to bring up, I kept coming up with Annie Sullivan, who is the teacher that taught Helen Keller. And, of course, everybody knows the story of Helen Keller. It was two outstanding movies about Helen Keller with different actresses and actors. But, I mean, that was in a time when really almost everybody would have looked at somebody like Helen Keller and put her in a padded cell. And that happened a lot. We've talked about that on the air. We've talked about that on Mental Health Week. And yet this woman persevered and tweaked her ability that she already possessed and brought Helen Keller to a productive life. And she went on, you know, to, she was recognized by several people in her teaching methods and things like that. So a lot of it does have to do with who that person is to begin with and how they portray themselves and what they know they can do. And that's what this guy, from everything I've read the last couple of days, was trying to give to other people by osmosis, I guess. He was the Disney American Teacher of the Year. He founded the Ron Clark Academy, and he's the author of the two big books that that Shelley mentioned. And on the Today Show and CNN and Oprah, he was dubbed by Oprah as her first phenomenal man. And everybody says his, I mean, it's like everything I've read, he brings charisma, energy, and devotion to the educational profession, which who isn't looking for that?
Yeah, he's actually got three books. Now, I think one book didn't come out until a couple of years ago. The other two books were written shortly after the movie, but I think in 2012 is when the third book came out. So he's still writing and contributing, which is extraordinary, because he definitely has good things to say. You know, but it's interesting what you're talking about, like what, you know, like, and I understand what this other teacher is saying, that they all can't get involved the way he does. But a lot of the advice he has isn't taking your whole class to Disney. You can expose people to adventure without actually getting on a bus and going to Disney. There's other ways of exposing the kids to adventure and to things like that, and, you know, with all the media and videos and stuff like that. And you can expose children to what there is around the world and get them to be more worldly and have that. That they, this cement jungle they live in isn't the entire world, you know, and it can get them excited also. But one of the things he did was that he actually found a solution for one of the situations. I think it was Tomorrow's Family, if I remember the movie correctly, where she had to take care of her, you know, her younger siblings, and he found a solution for the mom so that Tamara, because she was very gifted, but she was basically exhausted all the time and couldn't apply herself to her schoolwork. And at first, the mother felt invaded on, like she was making out that he was that she was a bad mother. But then finally, he got through to the mom, and she allowed the extra help to come in so that Tamara could then, you know, buckle down and get her studies done. You know, so he found a situation for that. But it was, as far as the mother and Tamara were concerned, this is just how it had to be. There was no solution. And that's what happens to a lot of people when they find themselves in a situation that's not ideal. They don't realize that there could be a solution. They don't know that they could ask questions. And that's why a teacher can really be a great resource for solutions, because they have access to things that maybe parents don't. And he was actually able to find some after-school programs for the other children so that tomorrow. So I thought that was great. And the story about Helen Keller and Annie Sullivan, like you said, is right on target with all of this, because Annie Sullivan never gave up. Interestingly, when you talked about the fact that there's been several movies made, Patty Duke is the one actress who was actually in two different versions of the movie. As a child actress, she played Helen Keller, and as an adult actress, she played Annie Sullivan in a remake of the Helen Keller story. Which I remember that. I don't know of any other actor or actress who ever did that. Did a remake of a movie that they were in as a child actor. It always makes me think of that. I thought that was extraordinary. And both versions of the movie were quite excellent. But
yeah, I thought so.
Yeah, but one of the things that always struck me about that movie is, like with Ron Clark, the tenacity of Annie Sullivan, and that, because at one point you see Ron Clark like almost giving up, but then he rallied back and got back into it. Well, same thing happened with Annie Sullivan, and if you remember, she was being issued off the property because the family thought that she wasn't being successful, and it was that day that Helen Keller finally got it and started communicating with her, started spelling things, you know. But that's also a testimony to never, never, never giving up, you know, because you just never know. I mean, here the family thought it wasn't working. Final day, you know, here you go. It was working, and if they had just waited 24 hours more, it would have happened anyway.
Well, and that's, I mean, you know, let's face it. Every day that you don't give up is another day closer to your success. So that's a hard thing to swallow, but it's the truth no matter how you want to look at it. You know, I did find that he wrote a book in 2011 called The End of Molasses Classes, Getting
Right,
Our Kids. So I'll bet that's interesting, too. And it sounds like he just looks up higher. He just looks up higher, and he understands what he sees. So how young must he, or how old must he be now? If in 99 he was, so he's got to be in his late 40s, right? Wouldn't you say? Right,
yeah,
on?
I guess. I think he's still a fairly young guy because you see a picture of him on the cover of that 2011 book, and he doesn't really look much different. You know, he still looks like a fairly young guy. So, yeah, he's probably in his 40s.
So he's made a lot of changes in our world, a lot of changes in the way people see each other. I'm very enamored by who he is. The trouble with watching a movie versus delving into the personal side of people is sometimes, you know, like remember the movie that they were going to do about the dude that was the whistleblower and made him look like a hero, and then it was, they discussed whether or not he was a hero. Who was he? We talked about him all last year. I can't think of his name.
Snowden?
Yeah. Ed Snowden, yeah, Edward Snowden. But, I mean, you know, everybody's portrayal of him is different. So you almost have to read an autobiography to get more of a true story because of everything else, movies in particular, you know, have too much of the imagination of the people who made the movie. So I found a whole bunch of stuff that was about the movie and about, what's his name, the Friends guy. And I thought to myself, this isn't really what I want. You know, this can tell me anything. So I'm so glad I found this a site. And he has a blog as well. So he's a very interesting character. And if you look at the, I'm going to name these names, and I'm not going to say why they were, but I think you're going to be astounded to see who the 8 teachers are on the internet that changed the world. Pythagoras was a mathematician and a philosopher. Sir Isaac
Pythagoras.
Newton.
Pythagoras. It's the Pythagorean theorem.
It's what?
It's pronounced Pythagoras. He's the one who basically created the Pythagorean theorem.
Right, right. The right triangle. And
right.
Yeah, he's a mathematical genius, yeah. Isaac Newton, of course, everybody is familiar with Isaac Newton. John Adams, who was the second president of the United States and was a lawyer, and he drafted the Declaration of Independence. And he was recognized for his peaceful treaties with Great Britain, and he actually stopped the Revolutionary War, according to history. Nathan Hale, another revolutionary teacher, he developed a class that was open to only female students after they decided that the higher education of women was neglected. Thank you, Nathan Hale. Harriet Beecher Stowe.
Yeah,
Harriet Beecher Stowe, who I always thought was a writer. I didn't realize that she did all of this, but She founded a school in the 1840s, and she is the one who wrote Uncle Tom's Cabin. And her contribution to all of this was to enlighten people about what the slaves endured. And then, of course, there's Annie Sullivan, who taught Helen Keller Braille, social etiquette, and obedience. And she by far surpassed what anybody believed she would be able to. So she was supported by Andrew Carnegie and Alexander Graham Bell to travel all over the world with Helen Keller and teach people what she did to bring Helen Keller to a better place. Leona Edwards, who I saw that name and I'm like, I never even heard that name before. She is the mother of Rosa Parks, who back in the day of civil rights, and she didn't understand. Leona Edwards Parks said of her mother, she didn't have the notion that we were supposed to live as we did under legally enforced racial segregation. So she was the strength behind Rosa Parks, her whole life, I guess. And Walt Whitman, he was just a poet. that's nothing. I don't mean it like that, but I never heard anything else about him. But he started his profession as a teacher in Long Island, and then he moved into journalism and political activism. But he began writing poems with new themes, such as rebirth, individuality, democracy, and body and soul, that were sometimes seen as controversial. And but because of his writings, he influenced a tremendous amount of poets. So I don't know who I thought I was going to find on this list when I found it, but I was surprised to see some of these names, because I didn't know this. Now, Annie Sullivan I was very familiar with. John Adams, of course, I knew about, and Sir Isaac Newton. But the rest of them, even though I knew who they were once I started reading, I never thought of them as being teachers. So I thought that that was pretty interesting. And the Ron Clark story, I'm so glad we found, because I think we should keep an eye on him and see what else he thinks of that's going to bring things to more balance. And certainly in the schools that we have today, there's not a lot of that. And again, Shelley and I have been very careful and feel very strongly about not pointing our fingers at anyone in particular. It's a group effort, having a school. Way back in the day, when they started a school, everybody participated in the school to teach the kids. Moms came in and dads came in, and all the members of the little township where the school was built, everybody participated in the teaching of a child. And it's a shame that we lost that, because that's one of the problems today. So,
one of the things, and I know that we've only got like a minute left, I think one of the things that's important to recognize is that it's less valuable to point fingers and say this thing is not going right because you and you are doing things wrong. Once you've assessed that something is right and you have a solution, just concentrate on the solution and implementing it, and take the blame game off the table. That's one of the things I love about his books. They can be used by teachers or parents, because those same guidelines can be used by parents to inspire their kids, both at home and in school. So it's a solution. So who cares what went before? If your kid wasn't excelling before, you couldn't get them interested before, just try new things. And stop trying to figure out, you know, who was to blame, or if it was the teacher or the kid or you. Just try something new and see if you get better results. And let go of what wasn't working before and who was responsible for it. It really doesn't make any difference. Go forward in a positive light.
Mm-hmm. Well, and empowering people with the understanding that they're capable. We're all capable. Things that are out of reach, of doing things that appear maybe too difficult for us. We're all capable. And I think teaching kids that is important as well, and relating to people's beliefs and other people's culture is a big thing. We've talked about that for a long time, too. So everybody go out there and have a great day. The sun is shining in my window like I'm the only one it's looking at right now. And I think it's cool and nice outside, and I hope everybody has a great day. So God bless everybody. We'll be back tomorrow. I hope you'll join us. Bye-bye. Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, Renee. Bye, everyone. Have a wonderful day, and we'll speak to you in the morning.